This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto news, exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
You know that noise at the beginning where the car is going through the gears? You know, I actually recorded that back in the days when I was working at Motor Trend Magazine with Milan Field, Milan Dragway in Michigan. And that's as real as it gets. Anyway, hey everybody, how you doing? How's it going? What's going on? Yeah, me too. Right on. All right, cool. It's the weekend. BJ Colleen is here. Hi, BJ.
Right on. Okay, what year is this? Do we go back in time?
Right on, dude. Hang ten.
Right on.
Hang
Rocket.
Ten.
Power to the people.
That's it. So I was, listening to that, of course, and that brought back a whole bunch of memories. I remember it was in a Camaro. I remember that. It's like I was sitting in that car thinking to myself, how am I going to get the sound? This thing sounded so badass. It was awesome. And I think I captured it, but I've been using it as the intro ever since then. I've been using that somehow in the intro of the show, and I just love it. I mean, car exhaust, when done right, is music to a car person's ears. And, these days, we've got a lot of V6 engines, and unfortunately, a V6 exhaust note is not the same sound as a V8. And a V10, my Viper is a V10, not the same rumble, gorgeous, delicious sound as a V8, unfortunately. And maybe it's because I grew up on V8s, but when I start my Viper, it's like it just kind of sounds bizarre to me, even though it sounds awesome because it's an ACR and it's got an awesome exhaust. But it doesn't sound as good as what, a V8 can do. And you know what I'm talking about, lady.
Yes, I do. And you're absolutely right. You know, the problem is as we get on with the cars in the future, we're going to lose that. And the kids nowadays, they're not going to understand that visceral thrill you get when you, blip the throttle of a V8 engine, because there is nothing that sounds like that.
Yeah,
I agree.
Well, and I'm driving a 2017 Chevy Volt, V-O-L-T, not Bolt, which is all electric. This is an electric car with an extended range because it's got its own onboard generator, in essence. And, you put it in gear and there's nothing.
Yeah, it's
you
quiet.
Put it in gear and it's like, all you hear is air. It's like, what is that? So, I let somebody drive the other day, Jessica that works for me, and I go, come on, take me, down to the park. We'll take some pictures. And she's like, okay, I put it in gear. What now? I go, give it some gas. But you're not even giving it gas. You're like giving it electricity. It's like, and yeah. It's like starts moving. And she goes, how weird. I go, I know. It's like, anyway, it is what it is. And that's the world we're in today. So, unfortunately, we got to just live with that. But listen, there's good, there's bad, and there's ugly. The ugly is, depends on who's in the car with you, I guess. No.
Yeah, don't say me.
The ugly is that it's, the hobby that we know and love so much is changing, and much of it is probably going away. And I said the other day, soon my Viper will be a caged animal, only allowed in, motorsport parks.
Yep.
And, and I hope I don't – I hope that I'm just – dust or dirt or being eaten by worms at that time, because I'll just be an angry, crotchety old bastard, if you know what I
well,
mean.
Well, it's interesting. I think that, and there's an organization everybody knows called SEMA, Specialty Equipment Market Association, that, the hot rod hobby is still a big part of what's going on in America. And I think that you're right. It's tending to get lost because the technology and everybody screaming about climates and things like that. But they still are pretty strong in supporting the industry. And I think that right now maybe it's a lull going down. But I think eventually, as with all things nostalgic, people will start to embrace it again and come back and make them even more collectible cars than they are now. And I don't think it's going to go away for a while, maybe in 50, 60, 100 years.
Oh, I'll be dead by then for sure.
Yeah, we both will. But I'm hoping that the younger generation who have parents who have muscle cars and exotic cars keep it going at least for a little while longer. So.
I'm looking at this thing. It says Volt owners have driven more than 650 million EV miles. That means just on the electric part of it saving more than 34 million gallons of gasoline, and they drive all electric more than 80% of the time. That is so interesting, and that's why I believe, even though, you know, it's not like a car that you could just fall in love with, because to me, it's missing that V8 rumble. That's a part of it. But I believe that the Volt is a car that is so overlooked by so many people. And I got to tell you, I'm really digging driving this Volt. It's kind of a cool little car. So anyway, that's my test drive today. I'll get to that in a few minutes. And BJ, I think, is going to talk to us a little bit about the new Navigator that we've heard very little about. All right, you're listening to The Drive. Our show is brought to you in part by Bridgestone, who's passionate about making tires that you guys can count on when it matters most. Bridgestone. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet, the new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance.
Yep, I got her on the phone right now.
She is BJ Colleen. BJ is, her and I both spent time at Motor Trend and did Car and Driver Radio together. Matter of fact, I have a meeting with Car and Driver. Can't wait to find out what's going on there. That'll be fun if we can do some more stuff with Car and Driver. I really like that brand. I was almost 10 years with Car and Driver, and to me, they have the most integrity of all the different media brands out there. They have not lost what they originally came to the table with. And although they've lost a few of the greats, the writers, Brock Yates, who started Cannonball Run and did all that, but they're still just one of the awesome magazines out there that are on the newsstands. Many of them are dwindling away as far as the newsstands go. There's not hardly a lot there. Anyway.
Hey, did you know that Brock Yates helped write the screenplay to Smokey and the Bandit 2?
I knew he was involved with it somehow. I wasn't sure how deep it went.
Yeah, it was on the other day in the credits, and I'm like, oh, I didn't know that he did that. I thought that was fascinating. Wow. So good for him.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He was a great dude. All right, So the Lincoln Navigator, of which I showed on TV, and it was kind of that – the one I showed on TV was, had giant gull wing doors. And I think the reason for that stuff was that they wanted to showcase how beautiful the interior was going to be. Now, a lot of times those concepts, you know, of course, so many things they do, like those giant gull wing doors. No way that's going to make on an SUV, even though Tesla tried it with theirs. So tell us, I mean, is it that nice inside?
Well, the new Navigator is stunning. It's about the best way to put it. And yeah, you're right. The gullwing doors didn't make it, you know, just for garageability. That doesn't make a lot of sense to have something like that. But, you know, this is the 20th anniversary of the Lincoln Navigator. It's been 20 years since they actually started the whole premium luxury SUV segment. And they've had a lot of class leading exclusives, you know, the powerful third row seats and the deployable power running board. So they've done a lot of good things with their time. But this is probably the most luxurious Lincoln Navigator and probably the most luxurious Lincoln vehicle that is going to be for sale fairly soon on the market. And it's just, you know, everything that you touch, everything that you look at, from the quality of the woods to the kind of leather that they use, even to the carpet. I mean, the designers did not overlook a single thing on this vehicle. We were cracking up because, like, the carpet alone, you know, nobody thinks about carpet in a car. Okay, it's not that big a deal. You know, in your home, it's a big deal, right? You want luxurious carpet. You want it to feel good under your feet, you want quality. Most carpeting in cars is about 11 ounces of face weight is what they call it. The Lincoln Navigator has gone to a 28-ounce weight for the carpet. And on their black label, the top of the line model, it's about a 40-ounce carpet weight. So, we're talking like Rolls-Royce kind of plushness, even in the carpet. But it's just amazing. The woods are beautiful, and they have some really cool features. One feature that I think what they're going for is trying to create an effortless ownership experience for people. And one of them is something called drive modes, where, you know, if you have a four-wheel drive vehicle and you're all about four-wheeling and things like that, you got to put the car in off-road and you have to change the setup for mud and you have to change it again for snow and sand and everything else. On the Lincoln Navigator, you just have a simple knob in the middle of the center console, and you can turn it depending on what the conditions are, and it'll actually change all the setups in the vehicle for you. So you don't have to think about it. You don't have to panic. Oh, my God, you know, you're in Texas, and a big ton of rain comes down all of a sudden, and what are you going to do when the roads are all slippery? You just spin the knob, and the vehicle takes over and does everything for you. So it's little details like that that really are going to – make it a truly competitive vehicle in the luxury segment, which it, let's face it, it hasn't been in a while. Okay. They haven't done a major update for many years, and they've been waiting for this one, and they did a great job with it. Absolutely amazing. I can't wait for you to get in this vehicle and drive it, Alan, because you're going to love it.
No, they haven't announced certain things yet. What are those? Like engine size?
Oh, they haven't talked. They've talked about engine size. It's still going to have the 3.5 liter EcoBoost twin turbocharged engine, yeah, but they don't call it EcoBoost. They just call it twin turbocharged. EcoBoost is for the Ford side. But they haven't talked about horsepower. I don't think they've announced the tow ratings yet. But, you know, it's Lincoln. You know, you can bet that it's going to be pretty good because they've got to compete against the Cadillac Escalade and the Land Rover and everything else that's out there, luxury-wise, Mercedes-Benz. So,
well, you said it, too. You know, it's interesting. You got Bentley has got an SUV now. You've got Cadillac with theirs. And the prices are, you know, Range Rover from, what, $50,000 to $150,000. We'll come back and talk more on the other side. This is The Drive. I'm talking with BJ Killeen, my pal. Glad you guys are there. Hope you're enjoying it, learning a little something about the auto industry and what's available for you on the marketplace. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Introducing the newest addition to the Craftsman C3 lineup, the C3 19.2-volt brushless drill driver. A brushless motor means you get 50% more runtime, 30% more power, and a motor life 10 times longer than the traditional brush motor drills. With up to 600 inch-pounds of torque, LED integrated lights, and a Jacobs metal ratcheting chuck to lock bits solidly in place, you'll get even your most difficult projects done fast. Available at Craftsman.com, Sears.com, Sears, Sears Hometown, and Sears Hardware Stores. Craftsman, made to make.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
And BJ Killeen joining us. We're talking about the new Lincoln Navigator that'll be coming out soon. Also, a Expedition, a Ford Expedition variant. I have to say they're similar vehicles, although I know that I visited the Lincoln plant one time, and at the end of the day, even though they are built on similar platforms, most things are the same, but they go an extra big, a whole bunch, how do you say that? A lot further when it comes well, to the, but yeah, the, you know, I mean, everything from the bushings are different. You know, the chassis itself may be, you know, the steel parts, bits and pieces like that may be the same. But then when it comes to the ride and the comfort and the steering and the handling, that's where they really make a bunch of changes when they take and go from, you know, what would be an Expedition to a Navigator. Sheet metal is going to be different, things like that. But the most expensive part of the machine is the chassis itself. And so a lot of that is the same. But it is such a different machine when you drive, because I've owned a lot of Navigators. I love Navigators. And I've also owned brand spanking new, bought my wife an Expedition for our anniversary in 2005, and we loved it. But they're so different. It's amazing.
You're absolutely right about, you know, differentiation between models. And, you know, they share a lot of things because the F-150 is we all know it's an amazing truck. It's a best-selling truck for, what, 40 years or something ridiculous. And they work off of that platform, modified, obviously, to right. some extent. But, you know, you've got something that's got a fully boxed frame. It, you know, uses high-strength steel. And you've got aluminum body now, aluminum alloy body on the Expedition and the Navigator. So they do share some of the same. And the truth is, pretty much every manufacturer shares platform things because economies of scale, you have to. But it's how you modify it and how the engineers set them up for the specific customers. And I think that they really did a great job deciding what Navigator customers might want in a Navigator versus what Expedition customers are looking for. Obviously, Navigator is more geared toward luxury. Expedition people probably do more towing and more hauling with it. So, you know, you have to think about those things. And you know, it's not an easy task. The engineers have mega jobs to do, you know, and most of the time the design teams and engineering teams rarely talk to each other because they don't want, you know, just like on Kia and Hyundai, they don't want to know what the other person's doing because they don't want it to influence what they're supposed to be doing for their specific clients and customers. So, right.
Well, you know, let me just say this, that it's not easy to come up with words like we're doing here this early in the morning. And I just don't have a lot of words today. So
okay, I always have a lot of words. So you know me. Nobody's ever accused me of being the shy, silent type.
You know what it's like? It's like this. I finally came up with an idea. When we were younger, when cars came out of the factory and you could buy, you know, go down and buy a Chevy Chevelle, and you bought one with maybe the bigger engine, but you want it to go faster, you want it to handle better. You know, you put different this on and different bits and pieces here and there, and you go to the aftermarket. We were talking about SEMA earlier, right. And you upgrade this vehicle and make it really perform and handle well. And maybe it was too, you know, the loud inside. So you'd go and you'd buy this stuff called Dynamat. You know what I'm talking about. It's, you know, you put it down on the floor. It takes some of this road noise out. There's so many things you can do. Well, the difference between an Expedition and a Navigator is that they've taken an Expedition in many ways, that platform, and they've completely upgraded it to where it does everything you want to have, give you a premium experience. But even beyond that, they, like you talking about the carpet, who would do that? I mean, that's crazy stuff. But I'll guarantee that there's like, isn't there a Black Label edition or something?
Yes, for the first time they're doing a Black Label just like they do on their other vehicles. And the Black Label is pretty much the creme de la creme. It's got almost every feature you can ever imagine on it. I mean, you've got beautiful interior design themes on it that are unique. You get, and the best thing about the Black Label is you get unique customer service treatment as well. And that's probably a big deal because people that are spending this kind of money on vehicles expect to have that level of service. And, you know, Lincoln's got their pickup and delivery that they'll come and get your car and give you a loaner vehicle while you're being serviced because, you know, money is one thing, but time you can't replace. So they're all about giving you time. And
I can't wait.
You know, everything you want. I mean, it's just amazing.
Personally, so, if you look at the people that are going to spend a couple hundred grand on that, what is that?
The Bentley? There.
Yeah, but isn't Rolls-Royce talking about doing one now, too?
Oh, yeah, we saw spy photos. They were pretty. It was not pretty, for sure. So hopefully that's like camouflage.
Right. But, you know, and you think of Range Rover even. I know Range Rover and Volvo. Didn't Volvo make a the XC90, I think I showed it on TV. It was like $110,000.
Yeah, they had a special edition.
All those guys can do it, why shouldn't Ford be able to do it with the most amazing vehicles that they make these days? Does this one have a 10-speed transmission too? Do you know?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The six different modes, I'm sure, of motivating down the road. I mean, all that stuff she's talking about, obviously, nobody's really gotten their hands on one yet. We're just being able to get sneak peeks. But I think the Lincoln Navigator is going to be just an awesome machine. Can't wait to get our hands on. BJ, thank you for that little update.
My pleasure, Alan. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right. We will take a break. Michelle Krebs will join us from Kelley Blue Book. Get a little news and information on the auto industry. You're listening to The Drive. We'll be right back. Robbing on a bank in the state of Indiana. She's a runner, rebel, and a stunner. Found them everywhere saying, baby, what you gonna? Looking down the... Don't miss the latest auto news, videos, and real-world reviews. Find us online at TheDriveWithAlanTaylor.com. Hey, it's Alan Taylor. Are you looking for an opportunity to buy a franchise, one that you can really wrap your arms around? Crunch Fitness is really a great opportunity for you. Now, here's a fitness company that's about 10 bucks a month to join. So even if you just want to join, it's a great deal. You want to check it out because I have been personally watching this company grow like crazy. Visit them online at crunchfranchise.com and be in business for yourself, but not by yourself, and have fun doing it.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
And our show brought to you in part by Brembo, the choice of champions, Brembo Brakes. Well, joining us right now is Michelle Krebs, Director of Automotive Relations at Cox Automotive, Senior Analyst at Auto Trader. And boy, I'll tell you what, Michelle is in the know. So, the big question I think we would like to start with, Honda Accord. I spoke to Carl Brower, who I know you know, and you guys all work together at Kelley Blue Book there, and he's kind of on the team of Auto Trader as well. The Honda Accord, evidently an incredibly important vehicle for the auto industry for a number of reasons, because sedan sales are slowing, and SUV crossover vehicles are selling like crazy. So the new Honda Accord has been unveiled. Looks good. Michelle, what do you think?
Well, yes. It was last Friday here in Detroit. They had the global reveal of the 2018 Honda Accord. It's the 10th generation. So this vehicle is really important to Honda. It's one of their core models. But it's also one of the leaders in the midsize sedan segment. And sadly, that segment is in free fall. We don't even think it's bottomed out yet. So with the new Honda Accord and then, of course, the new Toyota Camry, the other leader in the category, just going on sale, we're hoping to see a little bit of stabilization or uptick in that segment, or not so falling so much, but it remains to be seen. Honda executives flat out said they hope that it holds its own.
Yeah, I think all the auto industry executives are hoping big things for both Accord and Camry because, like you said, it'll maybe give a little stability for what is you're calling a free fall. What happens if it doesn't? What do you think? I mean, are we looking at a change of the landscape or a continued change or the kind of the dinosaur one day will be the sedans?
Two things. First, we have to remember, despite the fact that the sales are falling in the midsize segment, it's still a huge segment. It's, you know, millions. It's up in the, it's among the, one of the top five segments. But we are seeing a sea change. There is this huge, dramatic shift towards sport utility vehicles. I don't think anybody estimated it would go as fast and as dramatically as it has at the expense of midsize sedans and small cars. So that's where we're going. Now, I would say that Honda and Toyota have been the leaders. They have held their own throughout this downturn of the midsize segment. Certainly not in the numbers they were, but, you know, they've held their own share, and I would expect that to be the case. And in Honda's case, it's interesting. Both have gone to a much sportier design, but also, you know, Honda is, when we look at Kelley Blue Book's measurements on different factors of consumers' perception on different factors, everything from durability to technology, it's top class. And what it looks to me like Honda's done is just up the ante in every one of those categories with a new model.
It's so interesting to watch. I mean, both Camry and Accord, and also you could say the same for, you know, Altima, Nissan, and really all of them. For so many years, they were all, and especially Accord and Camry, were like a scoop of vanilla ice cream. Mm-hmm. And today, it's like hot fudge sundae with the cherry on top and nuts and caramel and extra whipped cream. And it's like, wow, you get a lot for the money and a good-looking car and really quite a sexy machine now.
Well, right. And, you know, I think Hyundai just introduced a new version of the Sonata, and they've, you know, they were the ones that really did some breakout styling. Then
right.
They turned vanilla again, and now they've realized that was a mistake. They're going back to more interesting styling. So whether some flashy styling helps that category, I don't know. We'll see.
I got to tell you, I got interested. I get invited to go to see and drive the Camry, and maybe I'm maybe I'm like everybody else. I just didn't care. I think to myself, uh-oh, maybe people just don't care anymore. They have these lifestyles. I watch my I guess my kids is the best way to say it. They're all, you know, 29 to, mm-hmm. to 20. And they have these amazing lifestyles of they're canoeing one weekend, they're hiking one weekend, they're biking one weekend. And, I mean, my wife and I recently went out RVing, and I'm like, man, this is fun. And I pulled my motorcycle out of the garage the other day. I hadn't ridden in a couple years. And, I don't know. Maybe there's something happening, and people are getting out, becoming more active, and a sedan just doesn't cut it. That's why SUVs are doing so well.
Well, and I think the other thing is, you know, there are more single households, single people as heads of household now than there are married people. And so good chance there's just one vehicle in the household, and it has to do a lot of things. And also, I think we can't forget, despite, you know, gas prices are low, but also the auto companies have done a fabulous job on making sure there's not a huge fuel economy penalty with utilities now.
Well, yeah, and because, you know, you're getting things like, turbochargers that are giving you tremendous horsepower that you can have a smaller engine, get better fuel economy, and still give the power that people want. So there's so many good things happening when it comes to engineering that, people just have that many more chances. All right, let me just take a little break here. We're talking with Michelle Krebs. She is from Auto Trader. They have a tremendous amount of information along with the folks over at Kelley Blue Book. This is The Drive. I'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Maybe you're asking yourself, who is that guy in the mirror? What happened to the guy with the brass knuckle attitude? Maybe he just needs to decide, is that a tie around his neck or a leash? Join the Brotherhood of Muscle with an available 485 horsepower Dodge Charger or Dodge Challenger GT, the world's first all-wheel drive two-door muscle car at the Dodge Drive and Discover event. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Well, we're talking with one of the most well-versed ladies in the auto industry, Michelle Krebs, senior analyst at autotrader.com. She's also director of automotive relations at Cox Automotive. And, you know, they own Kelley Blue Book as well. And I don't know, what else do they own? They own a lot of stuff, those guys.
A lot of things. We have about more than 25 brands. Mannheim Auto Auction is maybe that little company that has 82 auctions across the U.S.
That's just insane, right? But you know what? I mean, that's how you guys have the information that you do, right? At your fingertips.
Right.
We were talking about Honda and the importance of Honda, the Accord, and the Toyota Camry to the sedan marketplace. And I hope that they do well. Both companies have done a really great job offering up a much better looking. I mean, we already know that the mechanics of these machines are excellent, but there was a little vanilla thing going on for a number of years. And all of a sudden, man, it's almost like Pony Wars with the hot rods and all the muscle cars these days. You're going design wars with these meat and potato sedans, you might say. And they've done a great job.
Right.
I understand you went to Toyota's new headquarters in Texas last week.
I did. Yeah. So Toyota had the grand opening of its new headquarters in Plano, Texas. It's part of a $10 billion investment that Toyota's making in the U.S. in the next 5 years. They moved about 4,000 jobs to Texas from all of its various operations, including California to New York, and then they're hiring locally. It's an impressive facility. It's huge. You can see Frito-Lay, JCPenney, you know, all kinds. It's where everybody's moving to build headquarters. And part of it isn't just about building new headquarters or moving out of California. A few years ago, Toyota decided that they had all these separate companies, and they didn't all talk to each other. So the goal is to have everybody in the same place so that they can hopefully move faster, because it's not known as a company that moves very fast. and do a better job of collaborating and in doing innovation. There's a lot of the future mobility stuff that's going on in the new headquarters.
Mm. It's interesting. A couple weeks ago on the show, we were talking about Tesla, and we'll get to them in a moment. And I scratch my head thinking, why is their stock so high? And maybe it's just because, you know, Elon Musk is such a bodacious businessman. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But we were then saying, well, you know, what's going to happen with Tesla? They are doing a pretty good job of building a pretty good car. But a company like Toyota or a company like Apple or Google could change the entire automotive world by picking up that company, Tesla. And you know, and so maybe, just maybe, you may see something like that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I used to think that, but as you point out, the stock is very high, which makes the market capitalization really high, so it would take megabucks to buy it. And, you know, I had always thought Toyota was a possibility. If you remember in the early days of Tesla, Toyota owned a stake, Daimler owned a stake, and they actually made the RAV4 electric for Toyota. So I thought that was a natural, but I think that they've had a split in that relationship.
Mm.
So.
Well, isn't the Fremont plant where they build Teslas, wasn't that owned partially by Toyota at one point?
Yes, that was the Toyota GM NUMMI plant at one point. So
right.
Yes, it was.
And they built the Matrix, I think.
Yes, and it was sold by GM as the Pontiac Vibe.
Vibe.
Boy, am I dating myself, Alan?
I know. You know, I saw one the other day, and I was like, there it is, a Vibe. That's what they call it, the Vibe.
Yes.
I thought, wow, that car. And that just kind of came and went, you know, but anyway.
Well, it was a Corolla underneath. I mean, there's a lot of them around. I see them around.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep.
Because they laughed.
That is funny. All right, well, let's hold on for a sec. But Plano, Texas, a lot of California, you said California and New Yorkers, and having to move to Texas, but talk about culture shock.
Yes. as one of the county commissioners that was sitting next to me said very proudly, we're a deep red county here. So I don't know how that's going to play with New Yorkers or Southern Californians. But Toyota, you know, didn't want to lose people, so they provided they were very systematic in introducing their people to Texas, and I think they made them some very lucrative deals. They can get a lot of house for their money there, so they're there, and we'll see how that goes. And they have to stay. If they took one of those deals, they have to stay 2 years. I think the big test will be how many will stay after that 2 year period.
Right. Well, I mean, I think you made a good point there. You can get a lot of house. You can buy a mansion there for what you sold a little shack for in Southern California or in New York either.
So, right, so that was attractive to a lot of people.
Well, maybe people will get used to that. All right, so talking about Tesla mm-hmm. Model 3 went into production. What do you know about that?
Well, it's a really important – so the Tesla Model 3 is the Tesla's first stab at a more mainstream vehicle. You mentioned to me earlier you were driving the Chevy Bolt. It's and now GM has come out with a Chevrolet Bolt in that $30,000, $40,000 price range. So this is much, it's supposed to be much higher volume. Its first really high volume vehicle. So this is a huge test for Tesla. It just went into production. I think the first ones are going into the hands of employees, and then of course, they got nearly 400,000 people to plunk down $1,000 each on a deposit. So it'll be really interesting to watch how does the launch go and. Does Tesla deliver on its promise for those? And do all those nearly 400,000 people stick it out waiting for their Model 3?
Well, that's what I was saying is, are they going to be able to, and I've said this to a couple friends, are they going to be able to keep up with the volume? There's, for some reason, some sexy cachet to own a Tesla. And all those people raise their hands. And what happens if they start getting pissed off and start, you know, the people that raise their hands, like, I want my car, a revolt.
Well, you know? I think they, you know, that you went in knowing that, you know, you weren't sure when you were going to get a car. So there's that. And, you know, there's certainly going to be some fall off of people that change their mind or they're just doing it, you know, to get in on it, and maybe they change their mind or circumstances change or something like that. So, but even if they get some fall off, I think that would be to be expected. But I think what, you know, they have to deliver a flawless vehicle. They've had some problems with the Model X.
Right.
It's really important in this segment, where, just like we were talking about with the sport utilities, this may be the only vehicle in the household versus the Model S, where it's probably part of a fleet. It'll be really important to get this one right. Now, I suspect a lot of them will be sold to add to a household that already has a Model S or a Model X. But,
right.
All right. There will be people that know.
We'll watch that and report on it as we see what happens. When we come back, 5 more minutes before the top of the hour, I want to talk about EV sales. Quite the buzz. We're talking with Michelle Krebs, Senior Automotive Analyst at Auto Trader. I'm Alan Taylor. This is The Drive. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Haynes manuals are now available in online format for all electronic devices. With Haynes Manual Online, you get all the trusted content of the Haynes printed manual. Added features include the ability to enlarge every color photo, a keyword search function, and a detailed troubleshooting section. There are over 180 car, truck, and motorcycle online manuals to choose from, with more being added every day. Go to Haynes.com and enter your make, model, and year to find the Haynes online manual for your vehicle. You can do it for yourself. Let Haynes Manuals Online show you how.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, if you do like working on your cars, make sure you have the right automotive manual. Haynes Automotive Manual is the information resource for the DIY enthusiast. They're also the worldwide leader of automotive and motorcycle repair information for over 50 years. HAYNES.com. Check it out. Michelle Krebs is with us, senior analyst at autotrader.com and also director of automotive relations at Cox Automotive Media. All right, let's talk about EV sales. I am driving a Chevy Volt with a V. They make a Volt and a Bolt, which is a little confusing. The mm-hmm. Volt is the extended range electric vehicle, has its own onboard generator. The Bolt with a B is an all-electric vehicle. I really like the Volt. I think it's been overlooked. I've said this for years. I've told many a friend to buy them. Every single one that has bought them, which is about a half dozen of friends, that, you know, they made the jump and bought a Chevy. Like, these are guys that were driving a BMW, you know, some SUVs, but they wanted something that was really economical, that wouldn't leave them with range anxiety. So they found, and there's some really good deals to be had on Volts, the old generation and this one. But this does have a window sticker of $40,000. Now, you take all the different things off for the tax and all the different things, you can probably get in the I don't know, mid to low 30s. But what a nice machine it is. But you said there's a bit of a buzz going on, a lot of chatter, and sales are still low with EV electric vehicles.
Well, you know, I get so many calls from media about the electric vehicle market. And I think there's this, because there's so much buzz in the media about it, I think people think that the sales are soaring. So I did some digging into the numbers. EV sales, so the EV share of the market in June was 0.4%. Now, that does not include Tesla. If you add that in, maybe it's still just under 1%. So a lot of buzz for something like 1% of the market. And if you add in hybrids, there's another percentage point. But it's a part of the market that's really challenging. I mean, electric vehicles have gone up some, we think, it looks like, to the detriment of hybrids. So it's not like people are getting an electric vehicle instead of a hybrid. But we see heavy, heavy discounting in that segment. Like you said, good deals, go get a hybrid, because they're discounted by as much as 20%, plus, as you mentioned, the tax credit of $7,500 if you buy it.
Right, depending on what state you're in, of course.
Right. And even more if you live in a city that, you know, there was a period of time where the city of Atlanta was offering additional discounts on tax credits on electric vehicles. Nissan Leaf was everywhere. As soon as they lifted those, got rid of that tax credit there, you didn't see as many, though.
Hmm. I think people are a little bit scared of what happens when I go, you know, resell, go to sell it. You can.
Well, they should.
Yeah.
The resale values. If you, you know, I think people forget, if you get a huge discount at the front end, it comes from somewhere. So when you right. go to trade it, you're going to lose money at the other end. So we are seeing, you know, very low residual values on these kinds of vehicles.
I think a friend of ours, and you know who I'm talking about, who got the $99 deal,
yeah.
$99 a month on a Fiat 500e. What
yes.
a bargain. I mean, what? That's craziness, but it's good for him. And I'm, if I lived in the same state as you, I may have gone and picked one up because my wife drives a Fiat 500 Abarth, the little hot rod version.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, $99 a month, how do you go wrong with that? It's a lease, so you don't have to worry about it. At the end of 3 years, give it back.
Right, right, so. Which is probably the way to do some of these really newer technology kinds of vehicles is through a lease.
Yeah, no question. Well, that's the, you know, we were talking about the EV sales, and of course, Tesla is an EV, and it's got that one thing going for it, that it is a sexy thing called a Tesla. But I think after that buzz wears off in a few more years, it's starting to wear off a little bit now. It'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, 5 years down the road. Of course, that's what you guys do. Do you see any of that on the older big Teslas that they make?
Well, we have seen, you know, if you look at the sales data, they've dipped a little bit. You know, it's the Teslas is only, you know, only certain people can acquire them because they're very expensive. But I will say, you know, the Tesla brand is incredible. When we look at our brand perception by what consumers think of the brand in various aspects, Tesla just is at the top of the
yeah.
charts on some of that.
It's like Teflon somehow to the car
yeah,
industry.
So it'll be interesting to see where it
yeah,
goes.
No doubt about it. Well, Michelle Krebs, you're the best. Thank you so much. AutoTrader.com.
Thanks for having me.
You bring so much good information to the show. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to take a little break. There's some news and then a whole other hour of The Drive. We'll be back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead. You know the night's
magic seemed to win. Where does the love for a car come from? If the car is a Subaru Legacy, the answer would be the symmetrical all-wheel drive. Power goes to all four wheels all the time for optimum grip. The Subaru Boxer engine's lower center of gravity makes the Subaru Legacy more responsive around corners and gets better fuel economy than front-wheel drive competitors. What you have then is a midsize sedan with grip, handling, and enviable fuel economy. It's no wonder it turns people into people who love cars. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.
This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto news, exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
I like to consider this show the collective soul of the automotive hobby. And the reason is because after 30 years of being in this crazy hobby, hardcore, actually it's really 40 years, but 30 years as a journalist, I think I know everybody, including Greg Migliori, who is now the editor-in-chief of Autoblog. Greg, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, well, congrats. I know you and I worked together when we produced Auto Week's radio show way back in the day with my buddy Thomas Michael Berg. So,
that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you were good at it. So, hence now you have risen to a higher, newer, better space with Autoblog and all things good. Now, you have given me, I see, four amazing things to talk about. I'm going to tell the world what they are. The Ford Bronco. I think it's going to be a 2020, probably come out in 2019. We start there, and then an Aston Martin Valkyrie. Did I say it? Or Valkyrie? How do you say that?
So I'm going to say Valkyrie. But, you know, we can play with it.
I know. Dodge Demon and a Fiat 124 Spider you just drove. So I'm going to start with the Ford Bronco because everybody, for whatever reason, is in love with the classic Ford Broncos of the 60s and 70s. I mean, they're bringing $50,000 to $100,000 and more dollars at auctions for the classic car auctions like Barrett Jackson. And Ford finally has gotten their head screwed on straight, and they're going to bring one back from what I can see that will be awesome. Now, what do you know about it?
So I'm pretty psyched about this, and a lot of people I'm talking to are actually holding off buying a car for, like, if you can believe this, 2-3 years until this thing comes out. Right now, we've been running a lot of different, like, renderings and different, like, analyst take on what this new Bronco could be. Last week, we had something courtesy of Bronco 6G. They're a forum that's really plugged into this sort of thing. And they had this cool rendering that makes it look like it's going to be pretty retro. Now, honestly, I don't think it's going to look quite like this. This is the four-door version, which is the most recent story that we've had up on this topic on our site. But I think it should have some retro cues. I think they'd be well-served to do that. I mean, after all, if you're going to call this vehicle a Bronco, I think it's got to look something like that. So, yeah, we'll see what it's going to be like. Yeah, 2020 model year, 2019 arrival.
Here's the question for you. So autoblog.com, you guys can go and check it out. Did I hear you say four-door? Because I'm thinking two-door.
Yeah, so our latest renderings are showing a four-door version, and that's a little sacrilege, if you will.
Yeah.
My thought is they're going to do two versions, like the two-door version for the real, like, off-roaders. And then the four-door version, it could be a little more of a premium play. Might be more of a, you know, they try and smooth it out, make it for more of like a mainstream sort of audience. But, you know, honestly, right now, this car, this vehicle is so far away, I think it's still on the drawing board, even inside, you know, the bowels of, you know, Ford Motor Company.
Right, right. Well, and I know that there have been a number of different renderings out there. You guys check out autoblog.com if you want to see the ones that they have. I'm talking to Greg Migliore. He's the editor-in-chief of Autoblog. What do you think, is it going to be based upon Raptor underpinnings?
So I think that's one way they could go. I think more likely what they're going to do is probably come up with some sort of, you know, rough and ready but fairly flexible platform and use it with the Ford Ranger as well.
Ah.
So same sort of size, just different body styles, probably different tuning. I bet they'll share some of the same powertrain, you know, elements, just, you know, tuned for different things. And, you know, the question is, you know, in my mind, is this going to be a real Bronco, or are they going to basically just make a Ford SUV and call it a Bronco? I'm really hoping for the first one. Mm.
Very interesting. Again, it'll be a 2020 model year. Got it from Mark Fields, who I think he's probably on his way out the door, but he is the president and CEO of Ford Motor Company until recently. They are bringing it back, and the question is, what is it going to look like? All right, let me take a little break here. We'll come back and talk about these other vehicles, like this Valkyrie Aston Martin. I've seen some renderings of that. You guys can check out all this and more at autoblog.com. I'm talking with the editor-in-chief, Greg Migliore. We'll be right back. It is The Drive.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet. The new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance. Listening to The Drive, I'm Alan Taylor. Our show is brought to you in part by GoRVing.com, the one site where you can find everything under the sun for your next RV adventure. GoRVing.com. All right, our guest right now here on The Drive is Greg Migliore. He's the editor-in-chief of Autoblog, autoblog.com on the web. I'm curious. I've seen some cool pictures of the Valkyrie the new Aston Martin. What do you know about it? Have you driven it? Have you guys had it on a long-term test or a road trip or anything interesting?
Only in the future, but I cannot wait to drive this car. This is sort of on my, definitely on my bucket list. It looks like a spaceship. If you look at some of the pictures, we have them on our website. It's just, it's an amazing vehicle. And they're only going to make about 175 of them. The cost is $3 million.
Oh.
So, yeah, you got to get in line and then have some money while you're waiting in line to get one of these things. But I'm excited about it. I think this is, Aston's really serious. They're going to go after Lambo, Ferrari, Bugatti, you know, all those really, like, people who are serious about making speed machines. And this thing, it looks good. So, the pictures we just saw are, like, the most recent version of the car.
Yeah, and so, in other words, nobody's actually driven it yet.
Nobody, maybe not even their test drivers within the company. This is something that they're kind of, like, promoting way ahead of time, because they want people to know that they can do this, and they want to drum up all this, like, positive, you know, good vibes for Aston Martin. So this vehicle is very still much in the development stage.
Oh, okay, okay, okay. Because, I mean, you know, you see all kinds of things. The internet is so interesting. You can't tell what's real and what's not, hence the reason why there's so much of this talk about fake news. The nice thing about cars is that if it's fake news, it's still kind of exciting. It's like, really? Right? But the Valkyrie. So it looks like, from what I saw, go to autoblog.com, you guys, you can see it. It looks like something out of Star Wars, more of a spaceship than it does a car, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got all their latest, you know, aerodynamics. It's extremely lightweight, sophisticated materials. And yeah, it just looks wild. I mean, they really, it's like a race car that that looks like it could fly. It's really impressive, I think. Just, you know, again, 175 of them. They're going to really make each car, like, so perfect and unique, I would imagine, as far as customizing them to whatever those, you know, well-heeled buyers would like.
Right.
And I just think it's cool they're doing this.
V-A-L-K-Y-R-I-E, Valkyrie, Aston Martin. If you got $3 million laying around, you want one, you know, put that on your to-do list for a couple years from now when it comes out, if they build it. All right, let's bring it down to the regular guy. Somebody can afford maybe $25,000. I'm guessing on price, you probably know. Fiat 124 Spider, a nice little machine, huh?
Yeah, so we just had one of those in our test fleet, came through last week. It's summer here in Michigan, great time to drive a convertible like this. One of the best times of the year to live here, especially when it's convertible weather, which isn't very long. The one we had cost about $30,000, almost $31,000 actually, and it was in Abarth trim.
So that's why, yeah.
A bit of a tighter suspension, it sounds good.
Right.
It was a sweet little ride. It was fun.
So it seems like they said they were going to start around 25, but I imagine, you know, depending on what you put on them and things like that, still, you know, there's more people that are racing around tracks in these MX-5, Mazda MX-5. In this case, it's a sister to that Mazda MX-5, Fiat 124. Is it that it's the engine that is different? What other pieces and parts are different from the Fiat to the Mazda MX-5?
So it's two key parts, really. The inside is the same, and the outside is a little bit, you know, a little bit different. But where you're going to see the differences is the styling. I think they kind of nailed it with that sort of throwback, you know, Fiat Spider look. It looks like one of those, like, you know, 1960s Fiat, you know, Italian Spiders.
Right.
It looks the part. And then, of course, under the hood, it's a 1.4-liter turbocharged four-cylinder, whereas the Miata is naturally aspirated, and that's their engine. So, you know, looks and engine are the two big areas where it's different.
It's so funny how we can bounce back and forth between an Aston Martin for $3 million to a Fiat 124 Spider. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Dodge Demon, which is 840 horsepower. And I know they just did a ride out near you guys. By the way, did you get a chance to get behind the wheel?
I did not. One of my editors arm wrestled me for the assignment, and he had a great time. I wish I could have gone.
Well, it's what happens when you have scrawny arms, all right, brother? You should arm wrestle. Go to some classes and work out so you don't have to miss those drives, right? All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more of Greg Migliore. Evidently going to start lifting weights now because he didn't get to drive the Demon. But we can talk all about it because everything under the sun, automotiveautoblog.com. We'll find out if they actually got the thing to pop a wheelie. That's right. If you haven't heard, the Dodge Demon will actually pop a wheelie. It's like the first time they've ever had a production car do that. This is The Drive. We'll be right back to talk more about it.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Hey, it's Alan Taylor here. I want to tell you about a brand new video series I'm co-hosting with my buddy Scott Duffy. It's called Business and Burgers, presented by Microsoft. The show travels across the United States, and we're in search of the best burger in America and a side of great business advice, too. Business, sports, celebrities, and food collide in an interview-style format with noteworthy entrepreneur guests sharing the secret sauce that it took to build prosperous, game-changing companies. Follow us online on YouTube, social media, and at businessandburgers.com. Go check out our new video. It's up right now.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
So our show is brought to you in part by Dodge, domestic, not domesticated. Also brought to you in part by Subaru. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. But when it comes to talking about Dodge, I always like to have somebody else do it so that I don't feel like I'm like sitting here just yakking away because they sponsor the show. Although I'm a Dodge loving fool, especially when you can put 840 horsepower, make a car pop a wheelie. Nobody's ever done that in a manufactured car that was sold to the general public. And we're talking with Greg Migliore. He's the editor in chief of Autoblog, autoblog.com. So Greg, I don't know what to say about this car. It is just so bodacious. What did your editor have to say?
He loved it. I sent senior editor John Belt Snyder, went down to Indy, and he got to take it on the drag strip. I believe he got it to do a wheelie. He had a great time. It was everything, you know, you would expect this car to be. It sounded great. It was crazy. And, you know, it certainly looks the part, too. Those, like, crazy fender flares. I mean, just, I really like what they're doing with this here. You know, I mean, it's an old platform. It's basically an old car, and they're charging $85,000 for it and making it do, like, crazy quarter-mile times. I mean, somebody is really thinking over there in Auburn Hills.
I tell you what, I think his name's Tim Kaniskis, as you know. It's the president of Dodge and SRT, which SRT stands for Street and Racing Technology. And I talked to him about it when they launched it at the New York Auto Show. And he said, you know what, we're all a bunch of drag racers at heart, so we had to do something like this just to pay homage to all the real racers that are inside of, you know, FCA. It's interesting to see what else they're doing with this drivetrain package that they've created for the Hellcat and the Demon. Now they have a Trailhawk, I think it's called, for Jeep with 707 horsepower. What do you think about putting all that horsepower behind an all-wheel drive Jeep? I mean, it's just curious.
Yeah, I actually think it's a good idea. I think I think that's the Trackhawk it's just crazy. It's like a Hellcat Jeep Grand Cherokee, and you know, it's a different purpose. You're going from this crazy off-road thing to this really, really track capable SUV. And you know, to be fair, Mercedes and BMW do this all the time with, you know, the X5M, X6M, you know, some of the AMG SUVs. So, you know, the Grand Cherokee, I think, is one of the more robust SUVs out there. So, yeah, why not give it 707 horses and a supercharged engine? Seems like a good idea.
I agree 100%. I think what I call it, a Trailhawk, you're right, it was a Trackhawk for the race.
Same difference, you know.
Right, right. And then, of course, the, let's see, they make a wide body now for the, what are they calling it? There's so many different names now. So we have the Demon and the, what is the one before that that came out first?
Well, so there's just the regular Hellcat, if you will.
Right.
Which is 707 horsepower. And then you've got, you can get the big Hemi V8 that's naturally aspirated. A lot of people just really like that one. That's big old-fashioned V8 engine, and then, you know, you drop down to some of, like, the RT trims, which are, you know, slightly less powerful, you know, V8 engines. I mean, if you like horsepower and you like the Challenger, it's a really good time to be alive.
I know what I was thinking. They're calling the Hellcat wide body. I was thinking, what are they calling it? There's so many names. There's the, you know, the SRT and the all, but it's called the wide body Hellcat, which looks like a demon, but it doesn't have, you know, the 840 horsepower. But I believe that the wide body is designed also to, you know, instead of just go straight line like the demon drag race car, to really be able to tear it up on the, in the twisties, if you know what I'm saying.
That would be a lot of fun. I think the Challenger. A lot of fun.
Yeah, and then they even make an all-wheel drive one, or they call that the Challenger GT, I think. It's amazing, you said it a minute ago, it's amazing what they've done with this chassis that is really kind of getting old almost.
It is an ancient chassis. Now, they've heavily reworked it, but this is essentially the old Mercedes E-Class platform that they took from, you know, when it was still Daimler Chrysler. And they took it for the new, you know, the Magnum, the Challenger, the 300, the Charger, and all of those. And those cars, you know, everyone except the Magnum is still living on. And they just keep refining it. They keep kind of remaking it. But at its heart, that's like a, geez, probably like a 17-year-old underpinning, at least, you know, from the blueprints, that's for sure. So I think it's a good idea. And it still drives really well.
It's amazing, isn't it? Well, all things automotive, and if you're interested in the Ford Bronco that'll be out in 2020, or the Aston Martin Valkyrie, which is at this point still kind of a bit of a long shot, you know, kind of a concept, $3 million, or the Dodge Demon that they drove, all these stories and a whole lot more at autoblog.com. Certainly appreciate you being on the show with us, man. It's good to see you landing in a great place there at Autoblog.
Thank you very much.
All right. We'll take a little break here. Holy crap. Yeah, there's a whole other segment going on here. All right. We'll take a little break and come back. And we've got more on The Drive. Our show is brought to you in part by Catskin. And if you love your interior, your vehicle, but you don't love those cloth seats, because, you know, after a while, they kind of get stinky, try out leather interior by Catskin. Cleans up easy. You can enjoy the luxury of a leather custom interior at catskin.com. Find out more. I'm Alan Taylor. This is The Drive.
Don't miss the latest auto news, videos, and real world reviews. Find us online at thedrivewithalantaylor.com.
Alan Taylor here, and I wanted to share the news with you about the new Haynes Manuals Online. They're the worldwide leader in vehicle repair information, and they now offer online manuals that are formatted to fit all electronic devices. With Haynes Manuals Online, you get all the trusted content of the Haynes printed manual, but with so many added features that help you get the job done right. I ordered one for my car and access it right through my tablet. There are now over 180 Haynes Manuals Online available covering cars, trucks, and motorcycles. You can order yours today at Haynes.com.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
And our show is brought to you in part by Brembo, the choice of champions. And I will be hanging out, with Dan Sandberg. He was on the show last weekend at the Pebble Beach Week. What do they call that now? Monterey Car Week. And to talk a little bit more about Monterey Car Week is another guy I'll be hanging out with, my pal Ed Justice Jr., President and CEO of Justice Brothers Incorporated, justicebrothers.com, who is also going to be emceeing Carmel by the Seas, Concours on the Avenue on Tuesday of that week. You guys can check it all out. I think if you just Google Monterey Car Week, you'll find all kinds of stuff, don't you think, Ed?
Oh, yeah. And that is sort of become the official name, Monterey Car Week. I mean, we've called it all sorts of names, but that seems to be the one that most everybody uses.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. There's so much going on. I actually just booked my hotel today. And let me just tell you, people, if you haven't booked by now, the choices are getting slimmer and slimmer, and the price is going up. I, honest to God, Motel 6, ready for this? Motel 6 was $539 a night for the room. I was like, what? I didn't get Motel 6 because that's way out of my league.
I'm going to show my age here, as they say, but I remember when Motel 6 meant $6 a night. That's why they named it Motel 6. But now you're telling me Motel 6 means $600 a night almost.
Right, exactly. Well, I did get a nice little hotel, but I still had to spend $255 a night average over five nights, $1,400 and some odd after taxes. So no matter what, even if you don't go to the, you know, the Pebble Beach Concours, which is a couple hundred bucks, or the Quail, which is, what is that now, like 600 or something now these days?
Yeah, 650 and up.
Yeah, right. Even if you don't go to the events that you have to pay for, there are a lot of free things you can do. We'll talk about that. But still, if you don't book early, man, you're going to pay a premium for your lodging unless you're sleeping on the beach in a tent.
Well, you, hey, you know what? All kidding aside, there is camping and or renting an RV. That is an option. And if you stay just a little bit out of the specific area, you know, then that opens up some other options if you don't mind driving in.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Over the years, you know me, I take a crew of people because we're trying to cover it with video and audio and all that. And I've stayed away, as far away as like 45 miles. And it's still, even a crummy hotel that should be, you know, $49 a night is $149. Everybody's getting a premium. So, but it's an amazing entire week of events, something different, multiple things different daily, right?
Oh, you got to go into detox after that week.
Right.
You really do. I mean, come on. I mean, if you can't even begin to try and do 75% of what is available.
Well, let's talk about starting with your event. You know, of course, not your event, but you're the MC, Carmel by the Sea. Beautiful. And this one is free, right? Concours on the Avenue. And you'll hear Ed's voice going over the loudspeaker. Carmel by the Sea. What's that main street there called?
Ocean Avenue.
Ocean Avenue. Okay. That is a beautiful, gorgeous place to be on a Tuesday. The weather is always absolutely wonderful. The cars are amazing. The crowds are big, of course, but it's free. So that's, to me, this is like one of the, I don't know, did you tell me, or who was telling me this is one of the premier things they say on the bucket list to do?
Oh, absolutely. It is a must do. And a lot of people don't come in early or that early a lot of times. And then when they do and they go to the event, they go, wow, what was I missing? It's a world-class selection of cars. I mean, we've had some serious cars win the best of show over the years. And it's just amazing. I mean, and you know what? It is the perfect Concours for the entire family, because while you're looking at the cars, if your wife is not interested, okay, and a lot of wives are, my wife is, but if your wife is not interested, there's world-class shopping there. Maybe not so good for the husband, you know, maybe not a good joke there, but I always say I can always spot the ladies that have gone off shopping and with the light blue boxes or bags, which means they went to Tiffany's, which happens to be in town there. And I look at the husband and I say, hey, everybody was a winner here today, you know.
Well, you know, congratulations. You've been doing this for a number of years, and I've been a number of times. It is August 15th, Tuesday, of the beginning of Monterey Car Week in Carmel, California. You guys were talking about this week of amazing events, everything from the Monterey Historic Races and the Prehistoric, which are even before that. You can see all these amazing historic vehicles. Some of them are, you know, $500,000 or $1 million or more racing around the racetrack. It's like crazy. And then they have all these kind of festivities going on also. And you get to walk around the pits. The one thing that'll be missing this week, by the way, or this year, is a gentleman that we lost, Vic Edelbrock Jr. And Ed, I know that just last weekend you were at his memorial. Maybe you could give us 2 minutes on that.
Well, it was a great celebration in every sense of the word. Vic had attended University of Southern California, and they had the USC marching band, a small contingent of them, that kicked off the celebration. And a number of speakers, one Tom Madigan, the noted automotive author who wrote the book Edelbrock Made in the USA, and also Mike Joy, who heads up the NASCAR TV coverage, gave a talk about it. And Mike Joy particularly hit upon what led you into this, Alan, and that is Vic was a huge vintage racer. Besides making the parts for hot rods and race cars and all the other stuff that Edelbrock stands for, he was huge in vintage racing and had one of the old George Fulmer Trans Am Mustangs. He had a Smokey Eunuch Camaro and the Washburn Chevrolet Corvette. And I mean, on and on, just a really first-class vintage car collection that he and his daughters would vintage race in anger, as they say. I mean, they called him. In fact, this was something I had not heard that was very, very cute story. His nickname was Edel Block because when he was on the track, his one daughter, Cammy, who you know also, he would not let her pass. And so he got the nickname Vic Edelblock.
Oh, it's so sad. So sad. Well, we're very sad at the loss of Vic Edelbrock Jr. He was a great friend to both Ed and I and our entire automotive hobby. The brand Edelbrock continues on, but we've lost an icon in the industry, and it's a very sad thing. So we'll take a little break and just give a couple of moments of thought to Vic and his family. Godspeed, Vic. We'll be right back. It is The Drive.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Maybe you're asking yourself, who is that guy in the mirror? What happened to the guy with the brass knuckle attitude? Maybe he just needs to decide, is that a tie around his neck? Or a leash. Join the Brotherhood Muscle with an available 485 horsepower Dodge Charger or Dodge Challenger GT, the world's first all-wheel drive two-door muscle car at the Dodge Drive and Discover event. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
And our show is brought to you in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. And I'm glad to have them as a sponsor. Making some fantastic machines and really setting the kind of the muscle car world on fire lately with that demon. Ed Justice is here. Speaking of demons, Ed Justice is here right now. Ed Justice Jr., President and CEO of Justice Brothers Incorporated, justicebrothers.com on the web, and my longtime friend. Ed, I can't believe how many years have gone by. I remember the first time I met you at the L.A. Roadster Show. You were walking around with your dad, and I was walking around with Barry McGuire, and Barry says, you guys ought to know each other. You're probably going to be best of friends. Well, he sure was right.
Yeah, you know what? That was a long time ago, Alan. I mean, that's double digits a long time ago. And it was a really hot day that day. And I remember we quickly moved our meeting under the shade of a tree because we were out in the parking lot where all the cars were parked. And yeah, that was a long time ago.
Best friends are a lot of times made at car shows, whether it be men or women, doesn't matter, because you share a common interest of the car hobby. And it doesn't matter whether you have money or not. It doesn't matter whether you have the coolest car or not. You can share that interest and both talk about, you know, just things about the car, memories and history and trivia. And of course, you and I have been doing that for going on 20 years now. And you were a guest on my show when I first started Car and Driver Radio about 20 years ago. So it's, yeah, it's been a long, long time. Let's get back to Monterey Car Week, because that's coming up. We want to give you guys enough fair warning that this, because it really the culmination of the week ends with an amazing event called the Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance, which is really one of, if not the preeminent concours in the world. And but you got to pay. You got to pay for the tickets. You got to make sure you get tickets. I don't know whether they limit the number of people, but it seems like that I've heard people actually get turned away if there's too many people. I don't know. Do you know if they actually turn people away?
That's a good question. I can't answer. I've heard the same thing about Disneyland, and I can't answer that one either. You know, they always say that at a certain point they turn people away at Disneyland. Boy, you could have fooled me. You know, I mean, Pebble Beach is the granddaddy of them all, though, for sure.
And it starts, I don't know what the first, is there, do they have anything that is called the first event of the Monterey Car Week?
Well, it depends on who you talk to, but yeah, I mean, you know, some would say the Monterey Prehistorics, and I think most would probably say the Carmel by the Sea Concours on the Avenue.
Which is Tuesday.
Right, Tuesday. Because the Prehistorics are really the people that are going to run in the actual Monterey Motorsports Reunion, the Rolex Monterey Motorsports Reunion, the following weekend, are just there the week ahead to sort of shake the cars down, so to speak.
Right.
So the Prehistorics is like going to a rehearsal. It's not really, quote, an event, although, you know, a lot of people enjoy it. You know, so, I mean, I'm not saying good or bad. I mean, hey, look, here's one of the things about the motorsports reunion out at the Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca. If you're into photography, motorsports photography, and obviously I am, I've been shooting for 50 years almost now, Laguna Seca, or the Mazda Raceway, is one of the best places in the world for the average Joe or Jane who has a camera and a decent telephoto lens, 200 millimeter or less, to shoot pictures without a photo pass. And literally you can shoot world-class pictures just like myself and the rest of the pros do. So it's tremendous. I mean, it really has a lot to offer.
And you'll see people like Jay Leno and Jerry Seinfeld and even Ralph Lauren. These are all car guys, and they will be all over these. There's parties going on. The biggest party of them all, I have to think, is the Motorworks, Gordon McCall's Motorworks at the Jet Center. Of course, you can go if you buy one of those tickets. What are they, about $250 or so?
No, I think it's $395 and up. And you can check that out at McCallEvents.com. Yeah, and that is a big party. It is a massive big party. It started out as a get-together amongst his friends.
Right, right. It's just too fun. I mean, it's one of those things where you're at a jet center, so yes, there's private jets and there's some boats. And actually, the one interesting thing that came out of that for my career was in the year 2000 I went. Of course, that tells you how long we've been going. And I met somebody from the U.S. Navy, and shortly thereafter, I was test driving the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier, CVN-76. And then 9/11 happened. So, but I actually got to drive an aircraft carrier because I made a joke and said, I want to drive the biggest vehicle in the world. And the guy says, I think I can make that happen. That's the kind of stuff that happens at these events. And
you know, that makes two of us. You know that?
Really?
Constellation for me. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you tail hook out onto the carrier?
Heck no. We got on San Diego and went to Everett, Washington. I was on it for 3 days.
I actually flew and tail hooked onto the carrier in what they call COD, carrier onboard delivery. And then I got catapulted off, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. All that changed after 9/11.
Sure did. That's why I'm glad that I got to do that beforehand. I got to meet about 5,000 of the most amazing, average age 21 years old, the most amazing young males and females to me in the world. All right, we'll take a little break. A salute to all those folks that keep us safe on board the sovereign piece of U.S. soil floating in the ocean out there. We'll be right back. This is The Drive.
Don't miss the latest auto news, videos, and real-world reviews. Find us online at TheDriveWithAlanTaylor.com.
If the measure of a car was how many people it turned into people who love cars, the Subaru Outback would be worth its weight in gold, thanks largely to its symmetrical all-wheel drive. Unlike other systems that wait for a wheel to slip, it powers all four wheels all the time.
all while with better fuel economy than midsize SUVs. And the fact that the Outback is made in a zero landfill plant doesn't hurt either. It's a car that is truly built to be loved. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
And my friend Ed Justice Jr., who actually was the host of Road and Track Radio for a number of years and won the Dean Batchelor Award for Automotive Journalism. Congratulations for that, Ed. I'll be talking to our friends at Car and Driver and Road and Track next week, so I'll say hey for you.
Hey, great group. I love those people.
Yep. All right, let's get back to the what's coming up for those who want to take some time, head out to a beautiful piece of the coastline, Monterey and Pebble Beach area for the Monterey Car Week, which starts on the 15th of August, roughly, and ends on the 20th on Sunday with the Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance. But there's another big event that has just kind of slowly grown into a monster, and that is called the Quail. You want to take it from there?
Well, it's an amazing event. I mean, while you might see similar cars at any of these events, every event has carved out their own identity. And where, like we said, McCall Motorworks is a big party with private jets and all that, the Quail is a more exclusive, sedate, sophisticated party on the lawn there at the Quail Lodge in Carmel Valley, which Carmel Valley, I don't think they ever have a bad day of weather, only probably in the dead of winter maybe. But it is absolutely gorgeous, and you will see world-class cars. And, of course, your ticket involves free drink and free food. And these are not corn dogs. I mean, this is different types of food around the grass. I mean, this thing,
you ain't seeing no turkey neck there.
No, this is not nuggets and corn dogs, you know. I mean, this is the real deal. And people, of course, are dressed up very nice. And it's considered one of the week's premier events for sure. And it sells out, and the tickets are not cheap. They're $650 and up. And even at that, they could probably get more.
And by the way, when he says $650, I know guys like me go, wow, I can afford $7. You know, it's no problem. $650 a ticket. But the food is also world class, and the libation is amazing. But you'll see a lot, if you're into celebrities, you'll see a lot of the car celebrities. I bumped into Michael Strahan last year, and I was there, you know, doing a live show from the Porsche display. And you get to see, you know, the concept cars, and you get to see the designers of the cars, which is, I mean, if you're a car person, that's nirvana, to be able to meet the person that designed the car, whether it be Ian Callum from Jaguar, who also designed some Aston Martins, or Henrik Fisker, who has designed many BMWs and even the Fisker that you see, which is a beautiful machine. But when you get to actually walk up and talk to that person for a minute, if that doesn't change your perspective, Ed, of the automobile, I don't know anything that will.
That's right. Well, you know, this is the only event that they say is all-inclusive, that all-inclusive is a good thing. Because I've gone to an all-inclusive resort and different deals like that, and you find that the drinks are watered down. And, you know, I mean, yeah, but it's included. It's all-inclusive. This, it's good quality stuff, and it's all-included. And so it's one of the premier events. And, of course, the Quail is a first-class facility.
And then it all ends with the day at Pebble Beach, which can start out at 4 o'clock in the morning if you want with what's called the Dawn Patrol. And a lot of us knuckleheads get out there in the O-Dark 30, you know, because it's kind of a hike sometimes to park. Not a lot of good parking around Pebble Beach. And we watch the cars come on to the lawn, to the golf course. And it's kind of fun. It's, you know, they serve Haggerty's out there with his morning Dawn Patrol, and he serves coffee and donuts. And it's really a fun event, and it's grown to, I don't know, probably 1,000 people. Used to be just, you know, 50 or 75, then it was 100 to 500. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger. But it's an amazing event. And Ed, you and I have spent, I think, probably a good 15 or 20 years sharing the microphone with Jay Leno every year at Pebble Beach, too.
Oh, absolutely, at least. And, you know, you have to mention that Pebble Beach, the Concours d'Elegance, donates a lot of money to charity.
Yep.
I mean, that was really one of the primary missions of the event, besides celebrating cars and everybody having a good time. They donate a lot of money to the local charities. And it's an amazing event. And like you say, parking, if you go there and you park, you might park all the way north in the town to the North Pacific Grove, but there are buses that will shuttle you down to the event. They've got it figured out. It's really quite a deal.
Well, I look forward to seeing my friend Ed Justice Jr. and, of course, Jay Leno. And a big thanks to Barry McGuire, who we all gather at his place, and he co-hosts the show with us as well. So we hope to see you guys out at Pebble Beach the 15th through the 20th of August at the Monterey Peninsula. Ed, thank you very much for sharing some time with us today.
Hey, it's always great to be on with you, Alan. I'll see you up there.
All righty. That's Ed Justice Jr. He is at justicebrothers.com. I'm Alan Taylor. Until next week, go out and have some fun with your car. See you then. Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatch Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit HatcherFoundation.org for more information.